You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Happy Wednesday, everybody. Welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where, of course, we talk about the Indiana Pacers. As always, my name's Tony East. I cover the team for Forbes and the West Indianapolis Community News. And today, we're digging in to the mailbag for the first time of the offseason and probably the last time until free agency, because we want to hear what other people want to talk about and talk about it. So we're flying through them over 2 days, today and tomorrow. And, of course, to help me answer your questions from Twitter and dig into stuff that you guys want to know, Adam Friedman, my co-host, former Indy Corners writer extraordinaire. Adam, how's it going?
Pretty good. You want to know a little secret?
I love secrets, yes.
I deleted the Twitter app off my phone to try to not use it as much, and now all I do is go on Chrome and type in twitter.com and do it that way. Honestly, I can't tell if it's better. It's harder to use on the Chrome, so it makes me not want to use as much, but I try to cut back my Twitter habits, but it was not easy.
I, on the other hand, was thinking about people who aren't on Twitter today, because I was wondering how people who listen to the show who don't have Twitter can ask questions. So maybe we could think of something like that.
We have an email.
Email me.
No, we have an email. We have a show email that we never check.
I've never checked that once, so let's never broadcast
okay,
that.
Okay, so just give out one of your burner bet emails. I don't know.
Our first question comes from someone who I screenshotted a message and can't see their at, but their name is Rob, and I will tag them tomorrow. Mailbag questions. Longtime Pacers fan, bad Twitter user. I love that it's in a DM. That makes it funny. Do you think Dan Burke will stay on staff with the new coach if he stays? Do you like that we could have a great defensive coach to go along with a hopefully offensive-minded head coach? I'm not a fan of blowing up the roster too much, but if we look to make a trade, I think the best bet is a younger player with a high ceiling. Do you think there's any way that they could get Michael Porter Jr. or another player that could be hired as Kyra Ward? Thank you both for the podcast. Well, let's break that up. First part, the Dan Burke with the new coach. So I went on ESPN 1075 with Kevin Bowen as he was filling in for JMV today, and he asked me what I would want in a head coach.
I'm a brag.
So that's a prerequisite in my answer. He asked what I would want in a new head coach, and I talked about Dan Burke in my answer because I said, assuming Dan Burke stays, I think you have to go with an offensive-minded guy because, you know, as good as McMillan is a defensive coach as well, Dan Burke has been around for so long, and the Pacers' D has been good, thanks in large part to him, and players have talked about that with me before. So I absolutely think that he can be a factor in your decision to get an offensive-minded coach as long as he stays. And I don't know why he would leave because he's been with the team for a while unless the new guy wants to just completely –
yeah, it's all up to the new coach.
Yeah, completely flip the staff. But even then, I doubt they'd have so many guys they like that you can't afford Dan Burke anymore, especially with how long he's been around. So I kind of doubt he'd be gone. I mean, he survived the last couple coaching changes.
Yeah, it feels like Burke is pretty malleable to whoever's in charge, like kind of – and maybe is one of the guys who a new coach relies on to kind of get the feeling of the building, not just like, you know, like as Burke's been there so long, he knows all the owners, probably ownership, and he knows the GM, and he understands, you know what I mean? Even like from down to like the, you know, the staff trainer, like he just probably knows everything. And so he's one of those guys that like, you kind of, when you come in, you kind of lean on him to be kind of the guy to help like understand the like workplace dynamics, maybe is what I would say.
Right. So Larry Bird was 2001, right? Was his last year?
No, 2000, that playoff.
2000.
Well, I guess that's, yeah, 2000, right? That was 99.
Yeah, also Dan Burke has been with the Pacers since right at the end of Bird's coaching.
Bird, Thomas.
Bird, Isaiah, Carlisle, J.O.B., Vogel, and Nate. So
coaches.
He survived a lot of coaching changes. I don't know why this one would be any different, unless he just wants to retire maybe. I mean, he was 61 now, but he's been great. And again, he survived all those coaching changes, so I don't see why this one would be different. So we'll see.
And then to the second part of that question.
No, they cannot get Michael Porter Jr.
No, they cannot. But I do like the thought. I mean, that is the right thought if you're going to trade Vic, right, is go young. I mean, the Tyler Hero thing been thrown out. I think Hero probably is too good the way he's played, especially the last five games, to even get Vic, because why would they want to get rid of him? I mean, the guy's playing 30-plus minutes in crunch time for a team that maybe could go to the NBA Finals this year. So, but, like, that's the right thought. Some guy who maybe – was in the Vic spot 3 years ago, right, where he had a lot of talent, was a high draft pick, but for whatever reason is not performing, get him in the right system to excel. I mean, TJ Warren, similar player, right, that kind of level of player who you can put in your system and exceed their growth. from what they were.
Definitely, I think that's true. High risk, high reward is always scary. The Pacers do seem to make out well with already established players who fit that mold, less so with the younger guys. Yeah. But yeah, if they could get MPJ, I would be screaming for that. I mean, he's been a playoff contributor for the three seed in the West.
MPJ might not even get you Bradley Beal right now. I mean, I don't know how high you are on him, but I mean, if he stays healthy, I mean, he's looking like he'd be a really good
player. I went on the record. I was screaming for him that draft.
They didn't have the pick for it, right? They're, when they like four I back.
Know. We were talking about if he fell to the lottery, maybe trading up for him. And remember, he did fall to the lottery.
Yeah, but I get why. I mean, the whole jelly donuts.
Oh, such a risk. It
scares the crap out of anybody.
Yeah, we probably should do individual player like fake trades at some point. And I'm sure I haven't read all these mailbag questions because, again, I don't like to.
I'm sure they'll be asked, or we'll have plenty of content in the next 3 months.
Yeah. But, you know, that's something we'll talk about on the show. Specific trades for the guys who most likely do it. All right, number two, Coop D at Scoop of Coop. Another four-parter. Man, we got to ban parted questions in the future. Not that they're bad. Lots to talk about, but we have to rush through them, I feel like, to fit in our time, get straight. One, who are the Pacers / Pritchard's past trade partners, which could come into play now? His first one was the Thunder with Depot. And then he did that little cap trade with the Rockets where they got Stauskas and immediately cut him. Brogdon trade with the Bucks.
Didn't he make the trade for Corey Joseph with the Raptors?
Corey Joseph with the Raptors. That's another good one, yes. Technically CJ Miles too, but yes. TJ Warren was a trade with the Suns.
I think he made deals with everybody, man. I mean,
yeah, he's been around for so long.
15
exactly.
years, right? He's been a GM since like 05 or in that range. So I think he
knows every GM. Yeah, if you count the draft, you have the Heat, you have the Jazz. Like, that's already over a fourth of the league.
He has relationship with everybody in the league, I'm going to guess, because he's just been there long enough.
Yeah, definitely. So he definitely has a relationship with everybody in the league. If you're looking for a pattern with – I don't think he's traded with a single team more than once with the Pacers.
He also has been here 3 years.
Yeah, exactly.
As the president, he's been in the GM for a while, so I don't know if
they – And about half of his trades have been super minor, like second-round pick for a future second, or, you know, we'll take Nick Stauskas for your future second. It's stuff like that. That
teams don't make nearly as many trades as the NBA trade machine would like to make you.
Thank God. All right, part two of his question, potential free agents or trade fodder guys we could use toward our MLE. Justin Holiday is one. I don't know if many people are talking about. I'm just kidding. It's kind of hard because this free agency is going to be super weird with pricing just because there's not very much money and there's still free agents. I haven't super dug into free agency with the playoffs still going on.
And we have no idea what the cap's going to be. Literally, we have no clue.
But I need to – I feel like I should have an answer for these questions.
Where that Justin Holiday is the one.
If you don't get Justin, like, is your budget Justin Holiday? Like Trevor Ariza, maybe? I've talked about him on this show before. I was much higher on him in the past than I am now. But, I mean, again, that's why
Jeff
I said
Green. Budget. Is Jeff Green out there for that kind of money?
Yeah. Maybe Jeff Green. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, another kind of laughing stocky guy, but he is an okay player who can play the wing.
Yeah, maybe you're a seventh player. He's
Marvin fine. Williams, that kind of guy is who I would be looking at. Forward to you guys. Three, what are expectations for Goga with impending coach roster shakeup? Well, assuming roster shakeup / coach shakeup you're referring to involves moving a center, I'm all for him having a big role next year because I'm very high on his future. So what's next for him is I think somewhat big things. I think he'll be a very talented player. He's just got to learn to set a damn screen.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing with him is if they get rid of one of the centers, do they – I guess they'll use him as a backup center. I guess they don't have any other options, right?
I think they do what they did 2 years ago when they knew Sabonis would be the backup center and just toss a little bit of money at, like, a Kyle O'Quinn kind of guy. So you have that third center, that vet. Because you need it, just in case Goga isn't ready to really step up or anything like that. Not that I don't think he can be, but just in case, right? And Kyle Quinn played a solid amount. Injuries happen to big guys more often. So I would do that, is what I think.
Yeah, I mean, the question I think with me for next year is, when it comes to playoff time, is he in the rotation? And is he good enough to be in the rotation? I mean, right? I mean,
yeah, maybe, yeah.
I don't know if he's going to be. I mean, I don't know. I mean, he definitely has some good raw skills. I mean,
he was so up and down in the bubble. He was so bad at first and then very good. Yeah.
He's got kind of what – could he put them all together to be the player we want Turner to be, right? He's got some of the height and the verticality to kind of be that defensive type of rim judger, but then he's got a really good shot. So,
yeah, we'll see. The fourth question is more of a comment that we can do some sentences on. It says, Aaron's inability to defend without fouling in the playoffs. Yeah, that was a big problem this year, especially the game Vic got hurt and couldn't play. They just didn't have any dribbling penetration creation, and it kind of took Aaron out of the game. He definitely did not look like the guy that played really well in the seeding games. So, I mean, some of it was just Jay Crowder posted him up, and he's not a good post defender, and he kind of got stuck in some crappy mismatches with the Heat. But, yes, that was a big problem this year.
He really shouldn't be a starting point guard with the Pacers' current roster. I mean, or a starting guard in the current roster.
Agreed.
He's just – the sizing is too off. I mean, I don't know if in a future he would be, but to me, he fits right now best of like the off-the-bench guy, first guy off the bench, or, you know, whatever, first guy off the bench kind of player who can kind of bring you the same level of energy, kind of breakaway speed to the rim as your starters can at times, right? I mean, he can get to the rim the same level Vic can almost in some ways.
Vic right now, definitely, yeah.
Yeah, right, I mean, not Vic 3 years ago, but yes.
We have many more questions to get to. Some on coaching, some on not losing in the first round coming up after this break. All right, next comes from Andrew Harp _. His name's Andrew on Twitter. He said, what game of the first round do the Pacers get eliminated next season? Joking, but not. Can we circle back to that one after free agency? But right now, right now I'll go with 7. But the second one, it says real question. You don't have to answer that because it's
no. I'm good.
The second one says real question. One player to take the biggest step forward. One player to regress, either in role/minutes or effectiveness. Interesting. I like that question actually. Step forward. I think
I got mine.
I've got 3 answers, so I'll just not use one of those. So you go first, and then we'll see if that's
Warren. TJ Warren, probably.
Oh, wow. That was not one of mine. Okay.
Well, right. I mean, so the question is, I mean, how much can he get better than 18 points per game, right? It was in the year. And he actually finished with 20. Yeah.
If he's not playing with 2 centers, I'd imagine he looks a little better next year.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if he takes the thing is, like, if he did a step forward, he goes from being, let's say, a top 75 to 100 player to a top, like, 50 player. That's a harder level to break than going from, like, in the 200s to the 100s, I would say. Like, it just is. But I think, to me, they get the right coach in here and they play smaller and kind of play more at the 4 spot and really try to, work on his ball handling a little bit. He could he has the potential to sort of just kind of start in his defense. And add his defense to that, he has a chance to kind of be like a key cog of the team, kind of competing in the playoffs next year against some of the top, forwards in the league.
I think my step forward guy is Sumner. If he can get a rotation spot, just love what he can do.
Yeah,
we saw in the playoffs, he became an adjustment. He has just that kind of useful skill already. If he can really put it together in a rotation spot. But if we're talking just vets, I would say Brogdon. Just shooting closer to his old form if they can get him more in a secondary role. Regression, if he stays, my answer is definitely Justin Holiday. I would worry a ton about that. Not that I don't – like, I think his shot is very repeatable, and they figured out how to use him, and it maintained without Sabonis in the playoffs and stuff. But just given his long history, I think he'd be a regression candidate. No one else really pops out to me.
McDermott is the one I guess I could think of too. Could you see us?
Oh, maybe
down a little bit.
I don't know. I think he shot well in the past too, though.
Yeah, man. McConnell maybe in the sense that McConnell had a really good regular season, and that might not be there again for him. I mean, he just.
If Aaron can't shoot 40% from 3 again, that wouldn't be good. I don't know. I'm thinking too much of 3s, but
yeah, I mean, regression wise, like
it no wouldn't one really outperform their expectation.
Well, Sabonis did. I mean,
yeah, but I don't. He's 24.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, would Vic not getting back to 2018 form be regression?
Yeah, that could count.
Maybe. I mean, that's you're kind of picking hairs there.
Set next, another 4-parter. Irrelevant though. AJ Reese at AJ Reese 1313.
He always does 4-parters every
time. I know. I love it though. 1 ideal trade target this offseason. Ideal as in like breaking all the rules of trades, Luka Doncic. Ideal as
Drew
in
Holiday.
Yeah. Ideal as in actually realistic within the parameters of the Pacers in the league. Yeah, probably Drew. Just me and Adam have talked about, and by talked about I mean I said it. Before the show, doing a potential, like, what have we learned from the playoffs that could help the Pacers thing? And wing defense is really popping out to me in this playoffs. Again, I mean, every playoffs, but again, now, as its importance, and just having Drew be able to do that, even if his offensive load is lowered from what it is right now in New Orleans, I think he'd be a good
player. I also think having 5, if you go small and start Sabonis, 5 guys who could all score on their own,
yep,
in a way, and also can guess Bucks should three, but like who could stretch to four at the same time. Like five's lethal offensive threats at all times.
Vic be your worst defender would be insane.
Yeah, that. And, I mean, I think just having five lethal threats. I think honestly, the move will be next year to play three guard for the Pacers. That seems like to be the right, unless they, because I don't think they're gonna find the ideal four, and they're not. Maybe they'll find another forward, like some kind of put two small forwards. But to me, it's playing three guards. But playing three, like, because Brogdon's an oversized guard. I mean, he's like 6'5", and he can guard most small forwards in the league if he needs to. So, you know, if you get 2 6'4" guards next to him, that's a pretty good team.
The other one for me is Caris LeVert. If the Nets want to swing on Turner or Oladipo,
yeah, he's one of those, right? Where he got paid big, but he's one of those, like,
he's good.
The earlier things were like he's good, but he maybe isn't at his peak yet, and he's kind of taking a, because he has some injury history, taking a chance on a guy who could peak out a lot higher than you think, but you don't know. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, that would make the most sense. I mean, a victory, but also it'd be kind of ironic considering they got rid of him for Thaddeus.
Yeah. Two, do the jerseys stay the same next year? Does it change? Well, I've seen the stuff, the Hornets changed their jerseys, but I've seen the stuff about the Jordan logo being on a third jersey for every team next year, and the Pacers seem to change. They have the Hickory's every team gone, so
changes every year so they can get more money and
so on. Yeah, so I'd imagine they would actually have two new jerseys next year.
The NBA learned that they can, that it's actually the more
jerseys printing have, money, and it's easy.
Yeah, it's like you can make these jerseys so on demand that you don't need to like have, like, it's not like the old days where like you had to make 1,000 of them and keep them in the warehouse. Like I bet you could probably still find unsold, you know,
pinstripe
Pacer jersey. Like these ones, you know, it's like I remember because I tried to buy one of the new city ones, the kind of the, I like the racing logo yesterday in the blue, and they were very hard to find for any player that wasn't Vic, basically.
Three, who do you want to win the championship this year? I'll go first. The Raptors. I don't think they're going to. I think they're probably going to lose the series they're in right now. Actually, they might be winning the game they're playing at this moment. But I think
they're prisoner of the moment, man.
Are they winning?
I don't know, but you're prisoner of the moment. I feel like you always like game ones really sway you.
Oh, I picked the Celtics before the series started, but I have receipts for that too. Anywho,
they're up by one in the fourth right now.
I think it'd be super cool for them to lose Kawhi, but still prove that all their, you know, Kyle Lowry and role player co roster is still really good. And obviously Kawhi is a big reason they won the title last year, but they have a bunch of good players, and I would think it'd be cool for them to prove it.
I like the Lakers to win. I think LeBron needs to get to 5 championships, and then he can really be on. Like, so Jordan won the coast. I mean, I think LeBron in almost every category is superior to Jordan. I mean, just because if you think about the amount of, like, competition, right? I mean, that's the big thing about Last Dance is Jordan had no competition in the Last Dance. It felt like some of the times. Like, he was above better than everybody else, but, like, there was no
Kevin Durant. Until the conference finals, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, literally, they create, like, teams have created, like, 3 different big threes to try to beat LeBron, right? You had Boston one that had a, because it's Boston created that big three in the early 2000s or 10, right? Like, I guarantee LeBron gets to the finals more than once, right? And he might be able to get one from Kobe, to be honest, one of those years, right? Then they had the Warriors create a big three and then a big four because their big three couldn't beat him. I mean, that's how good he is. And, you know, I would like to see him get to, like, if he gets to 6 championships, he could probably be on, he would be on MJ's level because he has so many more finals appearances. But yeah. I don't know if he'll get there, but I think he can get to, like, 4th this year, maybe 1 next year, and that would be really big for his, like, long-term thing.
It was weird not having him in the finals last year. The fourth part of this question is, this one's going to be easy for me. Did Pritchard sound kind of off to you, like something was going on behind the scenes? No, he did not. I just think that it's a hard tone to nail when you're talking about a bunch of different topics that are kind of in flux at the same time.
Yeah. And I think it's a hard thing to talk about when there are so many other issues going on, and maybe it feels sort of trivial in a way to talk about a coach. Right.
Yeah. Next up, Craig Linderman, no R there, at CEL in Pursuit. Where does the team get the big athletic wing they so clearly need? And is there anyone in this draft worth moving a piece to get? I'm a big LaMelo Ball fan. That will probably be unpopular amongst you all, but I think he's going to be awesome. But other than that, not really, I don't think. I also like Mason Jones, and he might be available for them in the second round, but I don't think there's any wing guys in the draft. As for the league, yeah, that should be who they try to get, that type of player for anyone they move this offseason, if they do, or even with their mid-level exception. Where is the one they get? That's kind of hard. I mean, is Drew Holiday an athletic wing to you? I mean, he's kind of a guard, but I think he could play on the wing.
So, yeah, I mean, I think in the draft, it's very, it's a very, like, 2013 level draft.
It's a weird one.
Right? It's, I mean, I, and I, I think there'll be somebody who pops. They just don't know where they're going to go. Like Vic went two in that draft and Giannis went 15. I mean, you don't know where they're going to go. There'll be something weird. Like the third best player in the draft is probably CJ McCollum, who went 10. Maybe even better than Vic, to be honest. He's been healthy.
Terrible draft, yeah.
Yeah, but like, you know, there'll be I don't know in the draft if you necessarily pick for needed help now. Like, I'm a big fan of just pick the best player you think is going to be, because if he comes superstar,
sure. That's what they did last year. Yeah.
I mean, maybe don't take another center, I would say.
Yeah, no, like, centers. Let's get back to the wing question. Is there anyone in the league you feel like is kind of available that fits that mold? I don't really know.
There isn't a – I mean, Drew is the one. I mean, is Bradley Beal available, I guess?
Yeah, he's a wing, I put air quotes up, in the same way Drew would be. It's hard. Wings
are all the small forwards that have been, like, dominating the league for the past, what, 5 years are all pretty much set. And Ross Stillman's not as Gordon Hayward, and he's been too injured the past 2 or 3 years to really be considered in the top tier anymore. But, like,
Kelly Oubre, they could maybe get Kelly Oubre.
I'm talking about the top tier, I guess. There's like,
oh, they can't get any.
Yeah.
Yeah. Obviously, having a top tier wing would be sweet, but I don't know how they would do it. Kelly Oubre would be actually an interesting guy. I might think about him more this summer. He's my official answer.
I don't think
question.
There's anybody they can get. Well, I guess there's probably, I mean, I don't, any wing they can get that can probably, it's not like one of the Drew Holiday or Bradley Beal that will end up being a starter for this team. Put that way.
I think I agree with that.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I guess I don't know.
That. I'd have to think about that.
All right, last one, I feel like if they don't trade for a wing, one of those two for a wing, then they're just going to go back to the two center lineup. It makes the most sense, right? If they can't trade for somebody big. But I don't know.
That's possible.
Who knows?
Next up, Seth Johnson at Seth B. Them says, who are your top three choices for the next Pacers coach? Adam Friedman answers first with.
What did I say on Monday?
Do not even remember. Tuesday,
yesterday. Wow, it was yesterday. I'm recorded on Monday.
Your top three. Do we do rankings? I don't think
top
we did.
Three that. So, is this top three that I won or top three that, like.
No, your top three choices.
Okay, well, Mike D'Antoni, number one, probably. I mean,
you can't say like Pop Kerr, Nick Nurse. It has to be like.
I think Kenny Atkinson is probably two, and I think the Bucks assistant Chris Finch is at. No, I think Charles.
Chris
Lee
Finch is in my top three, but he's not a Bucks assistant.
Right, he's a Pelicans guy. I'm thinking Charles Lee is the assistant that I like.
Charles Lee, there you go. Nice. I haven't really narrowed it down a ton. Kenny Atkinson is in my top three, and Chris Finch is also in my top three. I don't know if I have thought of who my third is yet. Pretty hard.
I thought another one, like if they get like Jay Wright, that'd be awesome, but they're not going to.
Yeah, that would be insane. But it's hard to come up with guys. Becky Hammond, great piece on her by Greg Doyle and Andy Starr yesterday. Becoming a more appealing option by the day. I mean, that was really well written. It's hard. I don't know if I have thought of a necessary preference. I would like D'Antoni. I don't know if he can perfectly adapt to the personnel they have, but I still think he'd be a fine offensive coach.
I mean, he's just a really good coach, right?
Yeah, he's just really – yeah, exactly.
He'll figure out how to
make the system work for him. I guess he can be my third. I think the Pacers and me would be very happy.
It feels very – right now, maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like it's going to – like that's going to happen. Very, like, preordained.
Yeah.
Am I wrong? I mean, it just feels like they've been – every time I hear it, see D'Antoni, it's like, oh, the Pacers really want him, and he's already negotiating his contract with them, basically, as soon as he gets fired from the Rockets, whenever that is.
Ty Lue might be my third. I don't know. Maybe that's
I don't know. I don't know. Ty Lue, that could have a coach with, you know, I'm a superstar. I don't know.
I'm a Ty Lue fan, but whatever. All right, we got a couple more today. Got trades coming up. Got someone making fun of me for being bad at phrasing on the show. But first, we're going to take a break and talk about Built Bar, because Built Bar, as they say, is even more delicious are now their new and improved product. They have 6 new flavors, but I have to tell you what they are before I tell you what the flavors are. It is a protein bar for the health conscious guy. They all are 100% covered in chocolate with a delicious flavor base. So the new ones are caramel brownie, cookies and cream, cherry barcia, lemon almond cheesecake, carrot cake, and apple almond crisp, including their 12 original flavors as well. My favorite being mint brownie. They're great for losing and maintaining weight while having something delicious. They're low calorie, low sugar, but high protein and high fiber. Best of all, if you go to BuiltBar.com, use the promo code LOCKEDON, all one word, you'll get $10 off your next order. That's LOCKEDON for $10 off at BuiltBar.com. All right, Adam, 3 more today. Number 1 comes from Josh Hinkle at IMJHinkle_99. Do you guys see... Honestly, sorry, there's a typo in this and I just read it wrong. Do you guys honestly think Vic won't get a deal done with us slash get traded? If so, is it a rebuild situation or try and get another good player and make a run again? This offseason specifically, I don't think he gets traded because of the stuff we talked about yesterday, where to me it makes more sense to kind of wait until the trade deadline, or at least like till a little bit into the season. But I understand why they would do it if they did it now. But I don't think that it will happen this offseason.
Yeah.
I also definitely don't think an extension happens this offseason.
No, to me, the money thing becomes such a discrepancy that, like, it feels like he's got to, like, it's hard for him to say no to that, right? Like, a lot of times these superstars are like, well, we don't care about the money because it's not that different. Because, like, a guy like Paul George, for example, when he was at free agent, he was going to get two big contracts probably left. So, like, over an 8-year span, he's going to make the same amount of money he was making, whether he signed for 4 or 5 years, because he's going to get another big deal. But Vic might not. I do wonder, though, if they just, like, see what's available, right? I mean, if there's a really decent trade that can get you another guy on Vic's level or in a pick or something or whatever they decide, right? You got to look at it, right? I mean, you and I are not both sold on Vic being, like, this, like, awesome player next year. I think he'll be really valuable if he's kind of your, like, second or third option or kind of one of your 1Bs with a bunch of 1B options. But if I had a guess right now, he's on the roster next year just because I don't know if there's, like, going to be an ideal move to make.
Yeah, it's tough. And for the second question, if they do trade him or not get an extension, is it a rebuild situation or try and get another good player to make a run again? The second one, for sure. They have an all-star. They have a kind of expensive team because of the guys they just had. It'd be basically impossible to kind of pivot with what they have. And they're all kind of young. So not a good time for a rebuild just given what they have. But yeah, I think it'd be probably 2 years away from that, at least 2 years away from that.
Yeah, I mean, kind of one of the bigger questions in this whole thing is where does Sabonis keep going, right? Does he keep going up on a level, right? Does he become sort of Jokic light-ish? I mean, I'm not saying he's going to be a top 8 player like Jokic probably was, but does he become a top 15 or 20? He was probably in the top 30 this year. And then you build a roster around him in a way, you know, that makes it work really well. I mean, really besides the 8 games, he really doesn't miss that many games. He's pretty durable. He plays 35 minutes a night. I mean, that's if he can develop a 3-point shot, basically he becomes like all of a sudden really, really good player. And we see him take threes in practice, so I'm sure he's working on it.
Yeah. I think that they'd be stupid not to try to see what they can build around Sabonis and Brogdon and Warren, even if Vic is gone.
Yeah.
Next question comes from Smith at Big Black Einstein. Being in, quote, win now mode, which do you think is more likely to happen? Moving a player for future draft capital or an established player? Well, I think the win now part gives away that the answer is established player. I guess I could see them, if they think they have like a logjam of guards, you know, between like Sumner, McConnell, Holiday, Lamb, Brogdon, and Vic, maybe trading one of those guys who isn't a starter for a draft pick that you could later flip for like an impact player or something in a bigger deal. But I think the most likely thing is if they do make a move, it'd be for something established.
Yeah, I mean, they'd have to have a guy on their board they like value super high. So like Donovan Mitchell, right? That kind of level. Like if they just think some guy's going to be like, because Mitchell came in the league like literally right away, it was a top, well, is it 40 player? Pretty much. I mean, he was so good as his rookie year and just obviously just getting better each year. I mean, they have to like really want one of those kind of guys, and then they have to figure out, because really probably their starters are maybe worth a late first. So like you're not getting, you know, it's hard to get a guy in the 20s who comes in ready to play. So they have to just – I just don't see them making a move for like a pick. It just seems very like not – unless they're – just because the draft's so weak, I guess.
Yeah, I think it'd have to be a future pick if they even did it. And I agree, unless they like are in love with someone in this draft, which would be very surprising, by the way. I highly doubt it. I think that one's easy. Last question, where I get dunked on kind of for bad phrasing. At Tree DeMoyle, the other name is also Tree DeMoyle, said, last episode, Tony said Sabonis wants the ability to do more. Is he aware of the fact that Sabonis was 6th in the league in touches? If he gets the ball even more, he'll be 1v5ing teams. I did know he was 6th in the league in touches. That was something I was researching when I was during Warren's explosion.
Hold on. Can I butt in here for a second?
Yes.
So there is this weird thing on Twitter going around that like the system created Sabonis. Like, there's this big thing that, like, oh, he got so good because they gave him so many touches and played him so many minutes. Sure, that's a little bit of it, right? I mean, obviously, but, like, you have to earn that trust. Like, you can get 40% of the touches, you could be Zach LaVine, right? Where your plus minus or is, like, terrible, right? Like, Sabonis got the ball more than another center on the base team because he could succeed with it. And then he turned those touches into really valuable possessions. Like, I think the idea that more touches didn't necessarily mean that, like, I mean, maybe he should be in the top five for that. I mean, he is a center who can basically pass out of anything. And that's, like, a super valuable skill. I mean, you see the Heat right now are trying to put the ball in Bam's hand as much as possible. Like, if you can put four guards around a center who can pass, I mean, that's just, like, a next level, I guess.
Yeah. I said that in the context of, like, I think every player kind of wants the ball more. Just as NBA players who are good at basketball, they want to be more involved. But the reason I knew he was up in the top 10.
Yeah,
I was looking when Warren was on his explosion. I was looking at stuff like, okay, how much would I be willing to drop Sabonis' touches to, like, get the ball in ball handlers' hands more often, just in general, like have him be more of a screener than the guy who has the ball all the time. And I think that him being in the top 10 is probably too high for my preferences. You know, I don't think Warren can be the guy he was in the bubble over a full season. Obviously, that's ridiculous. But just in general, if they're going to go more spread, I think I actually would be willing to drop him out of the top 10 in touches. Not that he should not have the ball a ton. He, like you just said, has proven he can do good things with it. But there is definitely some, I don't know what the right word is, rationality to the thought that they need to, you know, go through their perimeter guys who show they can create off the dribble, especially for themselves, a little bit more often.
Yeah, I think the interesting thing about that, though, is, like, there is something hugely valuable where if he's at the top of the court pulling the center out from below the rim and you have four wing players, I guess you would call them, with, like, almost, like, complete freedom of movement, right? I mean, that's a big thing. I mean, that's what Bam really provides for the Heat when he has the ball in his hands, right? He pulls Turner to the free throw line, and then their four kind of wing players can basically just operate like there's nobody around to stop them almost, right? I mean, that's the key with that. And, you know, they used him a lot this year, putting him in every possession because, I mean, he is a great screener and could really – I mean, his points per possession with Malcolm Brogdon were, like, off the charts. I mean, it was, like, the go-to play for most of the season. So, I mean, it made sense. I mean, you know, he probably doesn't need to be sixth in the league. I can get that, but I don't know if, like – He got any undeserved touches. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think if they have more talent, it's better, right? I mean, like, if Vic's back, they have a guy who can hit on the ball more, so that's part of he'll lose some and maybe Warren a little bit more, so there'll be some drop-off just from natural. But, like, they needed him to have the touches this year to succeed, and that's why they did it.
Yeah, that's fair. That was a good last question. I like getting dunked on for poor phrasing, and I get to dig more into it. Thank you guys for the questions today. We'll be back tomorrow answering more questions, presumably about a lot of similar but not the exact same topic. So look forward to that. Thank you guys for listening. We'll see you then.